Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today we're talking about pregnancy in the workplace. While most employers are aware that pregnant employees are entitled to some form of protection under the law, do you and your HR team have a full understanding of the statutes and regulations that provide protections to expectant parents, as well as their rights after the child is born? Have no fear, because here today to provide insight into this important topic is attorney Liz Johnston from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. Welcome, Liz.
Good morning. Thanks, Tony, for having me.
I think this is such an important topic and something that oftentimes we don't give a ton of foresight to, because we think of, oh, we have an employee who's pregnant, and one of two things comes to mind. Oh my gosh, how am I going to survive without them, right? Like when they go out on leave. And then the other one is, oh, this is so wonderful and amazing and such a great time in their life. How do we make sure that, you know, we help to provide support during this period of time? But a lot of times people kind of have those two concepts or mentalities that are running through their mind, and then maybe forget that they're pretty specific rules and regulations that govern kind of how we deal with pregnancy in the workplace. And while we've entitled the show Pregnancy in the Workplace, I am probably going to kind of ask you more questions regarding not just the rights of individuals who may be physically pregnant, but also just expecting children in their life, whether or not they are a birthing parent, whether or not it's through adoption, whether or not they are the father or just a non-birthing parent of the individual. But before we get into any of that, for our listeners who listen to us regularly, they already may be familiar with you as you have been on the show in the past. But for those listeners who this is their first time joining us or their first time hearing from you, can you share a little bit with our listeners about yourself and the work that you do at Verrill?
Sure. So I am an attorney in Verrill's Employment and Labor Group. My practice really focuses on all things employment law. So that ranges from compliance issues, employee relations issues, working with employers to put together policies that work for them, employee handbooks, as well as litigation. I practice only in the state of Maine currently, but I do practice before state courts, federal courts, the Maine Human Rights Commission, and on occasion, the Workers' Compensation Board.
So let's foundationally start with why this topic is important. I think in most cases, people are going to experience an employee or a team member who is pregnant on their team at some point, kind of during the course of operations. But couldn't they just wing it? Is it really important for them to have a full understanding of laws, rules, and the regulations before they need it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you said it really well, Tani, where this is a situation where there's two key sort of emotions at play when you find out an employee is expecting. One is that excitement, you know, definitely happy for that exciting news. And the other is, what do I do now? I think it's really important to have a baseline, at least understanding of what laws are going to apply, what obligations you're going to have as an employer. And that way it'll help you not only plan ahead for those situations, but give you that understanding of your obligations so that you don't take those missteps that might lead to some legal liability later on.
You know, I think that that's really well phrased, because oftentimes I feel like when we are advising clients on this issue, one of the things that we hear when someone makes a misstep is it's because I wanted to be empathetic, or this was my experience and I didn't want them to have that same experience, or I wanted them to have that same experience, without understanding kind of either how the law has evolved or changed during a period of time. And I think you're going to get into a little bit about this is an ever evolving area of the law. And we actually just recently saw some changes in the law. So there's that element. And then there's also the element that, you know, sometimes the law and empathy aren't always completely in line, and appropriately balancing those two, I don't want to say theories, but emotions and obligations. You know, when I'm saying all these things, though, I think there could be some listeners who are saying to themselves, Tawny, this is a problem for mega companies. This is a problem for your big employers, but I'm a small employer. You know, I'm a family-owned business, or I have less than 25 employees. Does this topic matter to me? So Liz, I mean, is this just a problem for big or large employers, or is this something that all employers need to be thinking about?
Yeah. So the answer to that, it's a resounding yes to this is something that small employers need to think about. Small employers in the state of Maine are going to have obligations under the Maine Human Rights Act. And one of the more recent pieces of legislation that's come through that we'll talk about today, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, actually applies to employers with 15 or more employees. So that really extends reasonable accommodation requirements for those smaller employers in a very specific way. So it's absolutely something that a small employer needs to be thinking about.
For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is attorney Elizabeth Johnston from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. And today we're discussing pregnancy at work. What obligations an employer has once they find out an employee is pregnant, and managing the employment relationship after an employee brings a child into their home. Liz, so we understand that this isn't just a topic for large employers, and we understand why it's important. When we think about bringing a child into a home, I think a lot of times people think of a primary caregiver or a birthing parent. Are the obligations that we're going to be talking about limited to a birthing parent, or are there going to be obligations that individuals have to other family members kind of within that family that's expecting a child?
So there's definitely obligations for those other family members too, especially another parent who might not be the birthing parent. One of the protections under the Maine Human Rights Act that recently came into effect within the past few years is a protection for familia status. So that is a protected category of individuals that's protected from discrimination under the Act. The Family Medical Leave Act is also going to provide protections for those employers with 50 or more that apply to non-birthing parents, but provide that protected bonding time and time to be out of work for those parents as well. And it's definitely something we're seeing more and more over the years, in addition to just the legal obligations that apply to non-birthing parents. We're seeing more employers that are wanting to provide additional benefits for those parents, like paid leave and time to bond with that new child.
So let's start, and I keep saying, like, let's start with like that foundational knowledge. And you're probably thinking to yourself, Tawny, how big of a foundation do we need? But in a lot of respects, we do need a fairly large foundation, because we know that employers are now hiring a lot more remote workers who are working throughout the country. It means that some of the laws that may be in your headquarters state may be different in states in which your employees work in. And also, there's just a general evolution of this area of law. Employment law is changing ever so rapidly. both at the state and federal level. So let's start, Liz. And I don't want, I don't want it to spend 2 hours, and I'm sure you probably could, talking to us about which laws apply to pregnant employees. But if you could give our listeners kind of just a little bit of an understanding as to which laws apply and then how and kind of what protections those laws provide briefly, I think that would be helpful for people as we move through the process and start using acronyms, because it's employment law. And of course, those acronyms are always going to come into play.
Sure. So I already mentioned the Maine Human Rights Act. So in the state of Maine, that's one that's going to apply to pregnant employees and prevent discrimination on the basis of pregnancy and related conditions as part of the prohibition on sex discrimination. And the Maine Human Rights Act actually has a series of specific carve-outs and language that applies specifically to pregnant workers. So definitely a law to keep in mind. The Pregnant Workers Fairness Act is another one. So that goes into effect in June of this year, June 27th. So that's coming right up. But that's a federal law, and it's going to cover, again, a lot of those smaller employers with 15 or more, and provide sort of specific requirements for accommodations for pregnant workers. Another law to keep in mind is Title VII. Similar to the Maine Human Rights Act, it protects employees from discrimination on the basis of pregnancy, childbirth, and those related medical conditions. The ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, that's another law to be aware of. This is the law that protects employees from discrimination on the basis of any disability. And it applies to pregnant workers because many of the medical conditions that pregnant workers may be suffering from might constitute disabilities. So that would provide reasonable accommodation requirements for those conditions. Another law to keep in mind is the Family Medical Leave Act, which I mentioned earlier, but this is the law that provides employees with that unpaid job protected leave for family and medical reasons. So this will come into play both while the employee is pregnant, as for, you know, for prenatal care or medical issues that might arise during the pregnancy, and then also for childbirth, time off needed to give birth to a child, and then again provide that bonding leave that we talked about for both the birthing parent and a non-birthing parent. Another law to keep in mind is the PUMP Act. So the PUMP Act is more recent law as well. It came into effect right at the tail end of 2022. And it expanded the break time and accommodation requirements that were already in effect under the Fair Labor Standards Act that protect time to allow for employees to express milk at work. So employees have a right under the FLSA, as well as the PUMP Act, now that more employees are covered, to take time at work to express breast milk. And there's requirements as far as the space that employers are required to provide.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned the ADA, and I think oftentimes employers think, okay, FMLA, that one I was clear on, and then sometimes forget about the ADA. But when you were mentioning earlier about the rights and obligations that we have to a non-birthing parent, it becomes interesting because I think there's likely an argument to be made too that we need to be very careful under the ADA that there's not an associational discrimination claim from the non-birthing parent or caretaker as it relates to pregnancy as a disability. Now that may be less of an issue kind of after the birth itself, but if we have an employee who may need to take leave prior to birth because of a birthing parent or birthing individual status or health condition, it, you know, there becomes that interesting argument to be made as to whether or not they themselves also have protection under the ADA. But I think one of the big things that really comes to mind for me, at least, is there's a lot of laws that protect individuals who are pregnant or expecting a child to enter their house. In your mind, is there a way that you would recommend kind of easily keeping track of this if you're an HR professional? I mean, is it a checklist or is it like a binder that maybe says like, you find out someone's pregnant, here are things to keep at top of mind. Do you have any thoughts on best practices to kind of keep track of these obligations? And I know we're going to talk about them a little bit more, but I'm guessing a lot of listeners are already kind of like, whoa, there's a ton here.
Yeah, I think that's a great question and a great point. You know, it really comes down to what works for you and what works for your organization. So if you have systems like this in place for other situations, you know, if an employee comes to a manager requesting an accommodation, and you have a system of addressing that type of request, I would say prepare something, you know, that mirrors that and builds on that for an employee who comes to you and lets you know that they're pregnant. I'm a big fan of checklists and lists and keeping yourself organized with a clear understanding of what steps should be taken. And I think a great first step, though, is to figure out what laws apply to you based on your size currently, the size of your organization currently, and also thinking about where you want to be in a year or 2 years and how you expect your organization to grow. If you're expecting some significant growth that might bring you into FMLA territory, even though it doesn't apply now, definitely something to keep in mind. Write a memo to your file or a memo to yourself for later to come back and check on that and see where you stand after a period of growth. But I think a good first step is figuring out what applies. And once you figure out what laws apply, figure out when those laws kick in. So, you know, your ADA requirements or your accommodation obligations, those are going to arise again when an employee comes and requests an accommodation, or if you become aware that an accommodation might be, you know, something that may need to be implemented based on what you understand is going on with the employee at her job. One example would be if an employee is visibly struggling with some of the physical tasks at work, and you start to suspect that, you know, maybe a lifting accommodation might be appropriate. But again, handling those in the way that you would handle it for other employees who are requesting accommodations. But having a list, having a resource for yourself that's prepared in advance can be a great tool to get you started on the right foot when the situation arises.
Thanks, Liz. That's really helpful. And I think something that, you know, you've given a number of different options that I think will be helpful for different people depending on what their style is. With that, it's time for a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is attorney Elizabeth Johnston from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. And today we're discussing pregnancy at work, what obligations an employer has once they find out an employee is pregnant, and managing the employment relationship after an employee brings a child into their home. Prior to the break, Liz, you did a great job of kind of giving us an understanding of the laws that are potentially applicable, and then also helping to provide some information to HR professionals about how to manage the sheer quantity of data and obligations that apply in this realm. So while we're talking about like managing the data, let's talk about first steps. So, you know, you and I do a lot of hypothetical discussions. Let's do a hypothetical. So someone comes in to HR and notifies them that they are pregnant. What are some, or let's actually make it even broader, right? They're expecting a child. What are some of the steps that you need to keep at top of mind in communicating with this employee about them expecting?
Sure. So I think, you know, one good first step is the congratulations. That definitely can be reassuring for the employee. Definitely, I think employee might be nervous to be coming and sharing that information. So it's just something to keep in mind to help offset some of that. Another next step to take would be thinking about confidentiality and sort of employee privacy considerations. You know, depending on how far along an employee is or what the workplace environment is like or what their relationships are like at work, they might not be sharing the information with other people in the workplace. So, and again, this is technically medical information about an employee as well. So take steps to keep that information, you know, confidential to the employee's wishes, as well as if there is medical information involved, keeping that maintained as you would for any other medical information separate from the personnel file and just to those who have a need to know.
That's a really, really important, you know, point to make that I think oftentimes is overlooked, because I think oftentimes people think, oh, this is great and wonderful news. And if they've shared it with me, they must have, you know, shared it more broadly. But in a lot of cases, individuals haven't. This is very personal information that they maybe don't want other people to be aware of. There likely is going to come a point in time where they will share it more broadly. But at the same time, you and your HR function or in your role in that position are being provided with confidential medical information, which seems like, you know, I think I 100% agree with you that you start with that congratulations, but you also have very, very personal information about that individual. And oftentimes, you know, we've seen multiple cases where the individual is upset because that medical information was shared broader than was intended. So that is a really great first step there, Liz. So thank you for highlighting both the congratulations, but also this is still confidential information and make sure you keep it that way. So other than making sure that we're keeping things quiet and confidential, what are some other things that we need to keep at top of mind?
Yeah, so there are two other big ones that I want to mention. So one would be to start thinking down the road about timeline, right? So eventually the employee will likely need or request some leave time. So it's a good thing to just start thinking about what that looks like in broad terms right now. Also start thinking about what leave your organization provides. Take a look at your policies on leave, your handbooks, past practices, and figure out what sort of obligations you're going to have down the road. The other really big and really important point, I think, is to, you know, there's probably going to be a significant period of time between finding out this information and when the employee actually goes on leave. It's important to maintain the status quo for an employee and treat them the same as you would have treated them absent this information, treat them the same as their peers. So, you know, we talked earlier about how empathy and, you know, wanting to do the right thing might not always mesh with the law. And this is a really important piece of this for employees who are expecting. There might be a feeling like you want to give them a lighter workload or, you know, take them off of what you know is a really stressful project to try to be nice, to be empathetic, to, you know, let them have some time. But that could potentially be viewed as a discrimination issue or, you know, even a retaliatory issue if they're not getting those same job opportunities and the same opportunities for succeeding at work and potentially advancing. So it's important to just to be mindful that you're treating them the same as you would otherwise. Of course, you know, if there's a reasonable accommodation need or request like that, then take that into consideration. But absent a more formal request like that from an employee, you want to keep the status quo there.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a really important point. I mean, there is a difference between you using your own judgment to redistribute work or to change expectations versus having a medical request from the employee, either themselves or from a provider that says, these are my limitations, or this is what I need from the organization moving forward. And I think a lot of times people think that that's kind of one of those technical, oh, does it really matter? And the answer is yes, it matters significantly that you're not, you know, replacing your own judgment with that of the employee. What other things, Liz, should we keep in mind?
Yeah, to that end, I think sharing with the employee the best way to communicate with the employer about their needs, if they need them, reminding them of their reasonable accommodation procedures, who they can go to if they have questions about their leave or entitlements later on, really opening those channels of communication to the employee is another great step to take at this point.
Liz, as it relates to communication and chain of command type issues there, let's say we have a listener right now who's not in human resources, but who's a line manager, who's in some other supervisory role within the organization. If they have an employee who comes to them and says, hey, I'm expecting, this is my timeline, I just wanted to let you know, is that manager permitted to tell HR, or from a confidentiality standpoint, can they not share that information?
I think if that situation arose, I would advise the manager to talk to the employee and encourage them to speak to HR themselves. You know, again, assuming that there's not an immediate accommodation need or that leave isn't extremely imminent, you know, I would encourage the employee to take that information to the appropriate channels themselves. If time goes on and that's not occurring and there's going to be important obligations of the organization related to leave, related to medical accommodations, then that is potentially something that the manager is going to want to share with HR just so that the organization can be sure that it's meeting the employee's needs.
Yeah, no, that's a very important point here, is that the obligation is on the organization as a whole. And as soon as that manager has knowledge of the pregnancy, the whole organization arguably has knowledge. So if you're a manager who has this information and suddenly you have an employee who maybe is calling out more often, or they're coming in late, or they're asking to leave early, if you think that it could be in any way related to that, the pregnancy, informing human resources would be an important step to make sure that they are made aware, the employee is made aware of what their rights are under many of the statutes that, you know, Liz, you've already discussed. Are there any other kind of first steps that employers should keep at top of mind as it relates to, you know, getting this information? And is it the same if somebody comes to you and says, my partner is expecting a child versus I'm expecting a child? Is there any difference in how we deal with some of these questions?
I think the analysis is really similar, Tawny, for learning that a spouse or a partner is going to be expecting a child, even if they're not the birthing parent. You know, we talked about associational discrimination and, you know, potentially if the birthing parent in that relationship or partnership is going to need an accommodation or be suffering from a disability at some point, it's important to know that and have that information so that appropriate accommodations can be made. Not necessarily, you know, the same ADA accommodations if the employee had a disability themselves, but so that there's an understanding of what obligations are going to arise under the FMLA and other employer policies that might apply here. So absolutely, I think having those discussions and having those discussions about timeline and expectations and communication are just as important for an employee who's going to be expecting a child in their family, even if they're not giving birth themselves.
I'm sure we have some listeners who are thinking to themselves, wait, Liz, you said like to be careful about redistribution, but I have a business that I need to run. And if I know that somebody is going to be expecting a child, you know, in the next couple of weeks, does that mean that I act like nothing's different? Or as we're moving towards kind of that time where they're going to be out of work, potentially for an extended period of time, you know, 12 weeks, it could be 16 weeks, it could be more depending on statutes and policies that the employer may have in place. Is it permissible to even talk about what that's going to look like? Or do I have to wait until, I mean, I don't know when one would wait, because usually it's tough to tell when a baby's coming. You know, it's not the same way as most surgeries where it's like, okay, this is the day I'm going in for surgery. I feel like there's a lot more unknown aspects when we're talking about pregnancy.
Absolutely. It's definitely the timeline can be one of the biggest surprises and issues related to having a child. So it's absolutely okay to be thinking about redistribution of work once that employee is out. And it's really important to be thinking about that in advance. So again, this is where I think having good communication with your employee comes into play. Have those discussions about, you know, especially as it gets closer to the time that they're expected to be out and giving birth, have those discussions about what that transfer of work is going to look like. The last thing anybody wants is for somebody to be in the hospital and worried about who's going to answer their emails, and you know how they're going to get a hold of their clients. So definitely start thinking about it as the leave gets more imminent, and set up a plan for how the work is going to be transferred to other employees or to supervisors, who's going to cover messages that come in, plan those away messages, those out of office notices. If appropriate, let third parties know that the employee is expected to be out of work. But again, really, really communicate with the employee to make sure that they're comfortable and they're on board and participating in that process so that things can run as smoothly as possible.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've noticed a lot kind of about that process itself that clients often are faced with is sometimes an employer asks for it to be left vague, just that they're out of the office, that they are very private people and they don't want to share the reasoning. Oftentimes the vagueness of that leads to additional questions because you have clients or other team members or third parties who then become concerned. Is everything okay? Is that person going to be all right? And oftentimes when they're going to be out of the office for that extended period of time, people do get more nervous, because maybe they care for you or they like you as a human being. I mean, it's not something we should be upset about versus, you know, being very forthright and saying, they've added a member to their family and making sure that managers and HR are aware of what the employee's preference is as to how it's communicated is really important. Cause like you mentioned earlier, you know, there is confidentiality and privacy aspects that are at play here. So those are some really good tips. And I think that open line of communication that you mentioned, Liz, really is, oh, so very important. With that, it's actually time again for another break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis,
and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is attorney Elizabeth Johnston from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. And today we've been discussing pregnancy at work. Over the course of the last segment, we talked about some of the initial steps that employers need to be taking as soon as they learn that an employee is going to be adding a child to their life. One of the terms that you've repeated a couple of times, Liz, and during the last segment you discussed kind of generally, was this concept of accommodation. What does accommodation look like, or what does it mean when we're talking about adding a child or another individual to someone's family?
Sure. So an accommodation is going to be, you know, in really simple terms, an adjustment to the workplace or an employee's work duties or schedule that will help them perform the essential functions of their job if they are suffering from a disability or a medical condition that, you know, maybe makes them unable to perform their job just the same as they used to before the pregnancy or the childbirth. So that can look like a lot of things in the context of pregnancy and women who are expecting or employees who are expecting. It could be time off from work for a medical appointment. It could be a change to the employee's duties with regards to more physical activities, maybe adjusting what they're doing so that they're not lifting such heavy weight. It could be allowing breaks to sit down. It could be providing a more ergonomic chair if they're having, you know, back issues or something like that. So there's a variety of different accommodations that might arise from the physical issues that come along with pregnancy.
Yeah. And one of the areas that I feel like we get questioned on a lot is this concept of, like, especially for more physical jobs, this is what's required of the position. Here's the job description. The individual who's expecting now can only lift 5 pounds, but there's a 25-pound lifting restriction. Do we have to accommodate, you know, that individual? Because then they're kind of going to be standing around. They're really not going to be doing much at all. And I think people oftentimes forget that we're going to employ the same analysis that we would with any other disability discussion, that pregnancy, like a back surgery, like any other injury, is going to be analyzed the same way, which means that if we accommodate for workers' comp purposes. So let's say we have an individual who experiences a workplace injury and they have a limitation where they can only lift 5 pounds at a time. If we're allowing that person to work with the 5-pound lift restriction, then we need to be making sure that someone who's pregnant and who has the same lift restriction is going to be working kind of in a similar fashion to that. And I think when we put it that way, when we have a discussion about making sure that we're treating different injuries or different conditions the same, that it becomes easier for people to separate that pregnancy aspect of it, especially when they're saying, well, I don't want that person lifting anything, because the empathy aspect comes in. And I think we see that a lot. Do you have any thoughts, Liz, as to how, I don't want to say how to decrease that empathy, but how to make sure that empathy doesn't adversely affect the judgment of our employers as they're going through this process?
Sure. It can definitely be tough, but I really like the comparison that you just made to a workers' compensation injury or some other disability that results in an accommodation need. And I think taking a second to step back and ask yourself, if somebody had, you know, XYZ other condition that's causing the need for accommodation, would I still be taking the same route or the same course of action? I think comparing it, and you know, this is something we advise in all types of issues involving implicit bias or, you know, maybe even more explicit bias when it comes to pregnancy, and there is that empathy aspect, but line it up next to an analogous situation, a similar situation where the accommodation issue is the same, and see, you know, ask yourself whether you'd take that same course of action. So trying to step back and take a little bit more of an objective look at it, thinking about the rationale for the decision, the rationale for the course of action can also be helpful to take that emotion out and leave just the legal obligation in.
No, I think that that's a really important point, Liz, and really, you know, well said. Let's jump ahead a little bit. And you're going to laugh when I say jump ahead. They have a child. A child has entered their life. Are there things that employers need to keep at top of mind while an employee is on leave related to pregnancy or care of a child?
Definitely. So, you know, I think one, we've talked a lot about communication, but communication, again, you know, keeping that line open with the employee in a very light way, just in terms of, you know, expected time back from work. And hopefully these will be conversations that were had before the employee goes out as far as expected time off, what things are going to look like, what their work is going to look like while they're on leave. To that end, keep in mind the employee's status is exempt versus non-exempt. This is a big one for employees who are on leave. You know, there might be occasions where there is an issue and you have to communicate with the employee to find a file or ask a question or, you know, do something work-related while the employee is on leave. So having that communication beforehand about that potential need is great. But once that happens, think about whether that employee is exempt or non-exempt, whether they're currently on a paid leave or an unpaid leave. And the reason I mention it is because if the employee is non-exempt and they're on an unpaid leave, any time that they spend working or responding to a work request, that's going to be paid work time. So, you know, something to consider in terms of communicating with employees who are on leave. Another thing to keep in mind while the employee is out is, you know, we talked about managing workload and redistributing work. You know, keep tabs on that, how that's going, make sure to monitor things so that things are running smoothly while the employee's out, but also that there's a plan for when the employee returns, that they will have their position back when they return from work. Again, you know, subject to other accommodation issues with the undue hardship analysis, which is separate. We can talk about that in a little more detail. But, you know, thinking about that return to work plan is another great thing to do while the employee is on leave, as well as thinking about accommodations that the employee might need once they're back. If there's any residual disability or medical condition that needs an accommodation, preparing for that, as well as any lactation needs once the employee returns.
And let's actually jump to that. Let's jump to the employee returning to work. So, you know, you talked about things that we should have at top of mind while the employee is out on their leave. But let's talk about what should we be doing once they return? Are there conversations that we need to be having or changes in either office space or policy that we need to be aware of once the individual returns to work?
So I think, you know, it really depends on the employee and the position that they're in. But you know, ideally they would return to their position that they were in before and pick back up where they left off. I think it's great to, you know, meet with the employee when they return and, you know, see if they have any ongoing needs and what those might be, but helping them ramp back up with their work and get back to the day to day, I think is great. As far as office space and any potential workplace changes, you know, I think the big one there is going to be related to any needs to express milk and creating space for that and time for that. But it's really situational, you know, in terms of what specific needs an employee might have when they come back.
Is that something that you think employers should be like directly asking, or is it something that employers should wait to say like, hey, I'm expressing milk. What, you know, what's the process here? Or is it more of a conversation that the employer is going to have either while the employee is still out on leave or maybe on that first day back?
So in a perfect world, I think employers would have a policy that sort of outlines what the employees' expectations are. It's definitely something we've seen more commonly recently is putting policies in place about lactation accommodations. And often those will instruct an employee to contact their manager should they have a need for that accommodation and get that process going either, you know, while they're on the tail end of their leave or once they return. I think what if there isn't a policy like that in place, waiting for the employee to come forward with that request is appropriate, rather than presupposing or putting any past experience of yours or a family member's sort of onto the employee in that regard. But if you become aware that there's a need for that accommodation, it's appropriate to make sure that those needs are being met by the organization. And so having that discussion with the employee would be appropriate.
It's that time again. So we had all this really great information and I appreciate it. And in my mind, so much I'm processing about like what someone needs to do because there is so much related to pregnancy at work and making sure that when someone returns that they do feel comfortable after, you know, an extended time away and also a big life change. And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break. But with that, it is time for a break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour.
Parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot. Driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe. Put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision centers.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever.
Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is attorney Elizabeth Johnston from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. And today we're discussing pregnancy at work. Prior to the break, Liz was just discussing, you know, things that employers needed to keep at top of mind as it relates to dealing with and managing employees when they are on leave and then also when they return to the office after a leave. You know, Liz, as you started listing things that people need to keep at top of mind, my mind started racing. And one of the things that I'm wondering is, if you could provide one tip to employers to help manage risk as it relates to this topic, what would that tip be? And maybe it's multiple tips, but a couple of things that you think are really important that help keep employers out of trouble in this area.
That is a great question. We've talked about so much, and so I'm trying to think how to boil that down to one tip. But I think I'd come back to communication. I think maintaining good communication practices with your employee in an environment where communication is open, encouraged, and facilitated, I think that's really the key to avoiding a lot of problems. It's really informative on the accommodation issue, on a return to work issue, on work redistribution issues. Having those discussions with an employee and providing an environment where they feel safe and like they can come to folks in the organization as needed and as appropriate is really going to be one of the biggest mitigators of risk.
You know, I think it's important. One of the things that you mentioned in the last segment was policy. And I think oftentimes employers forget that communication comes in multiple formats. Maybe they're not good at that one-on-one in the moment communication. But one of the things that they could also rely upon, and correct me if I'm wrong, would be policies that they could say like, oh, this is how we do this, and having you have to have the foresight to create those policies. But I think communication in the form of policies, as well as that in the moment, in the situation specific dialogue, is helpful. Would you agree that kind of it's a little bit of both of those that actually plays a big role here in when you say communication?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You know, the communication, it's not just those one-on-one discussions or those emails. It comes down to the employer as, you know, communicating information to the employee as well. And a huge way that that happens is through policies. The other really important aspect of policies is that it helps maintain consistency. And we talked about, you know, those checklists of obligations. I mean, really, policies can play a huge role in making sure that those obligations are being met and tracked and monitored and applied equally to each individual who needs them. So communication, yeah, again, the one-on-one, the in-person, the as needed, but the initial communication of what to expect, what's expected, how things are going to work, that's communicated through employer policies, absolutely critical for sure.
Liz, thank you so much for your time today and for you offering your guidance as it relates to this very specific topic. So I really appreciate your time, and thank you again for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.